Aaron Litton, how are you?
Hello, Pete.
I'm so pleased you've come in tonight.
I'm very pleased to be here. But you... I didn't bring a coat. I came up north. I'm from up north. I'm from Yorkshire. Yeah. And I didn't bring a coat with me.
You're from Hull originally, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
Yeah. I did the couple of clubs around Beverley.
Oh, yeah.
I died on my backside a few times up that way.
Well, so did Les Dawson, because that's where his act evolved, because he'd done a week in Hull, which would finish most people off. Yeah. And in the end, he just thought he'll be himself and just, you know... Yeah. Be lugubrious and take the mickey out of the place, and he went down a storm. They loved him.
Yeah. Well, that theme tune, of course, all I think about is the naked guys, the bottom hanging out, because they're all sitting in a line.
That's right. They were firemen.
Yeah. Were they?
Yeah, we were. Before we started shooting the first series, in the last week of what we call pre-production, before we actually the cameras start rolling, we were doing these shots for the titles, and then we asked there was guys playing volleyball on the beach, and we asked if they would if we could do some shots of them and stuff. So we bought them a kebab and a beer each, and they all sat along, and they said, "Oh, can you just pull your shorts?" I didn't say this, thank goodness. The director said, "Can you just pull your shorts down a bit?" Well, they pulled them right down, and they went, "No, no, no, it's not that kind of show. Just down a little bit, you know, just see a bit of." It's a bit cheeky, you know.
Amazing.
And they did it, bless them.
I got so much to ask you. First of all, I think it's hysterical. Ladies and gentlemen, what he's just done is he's just put on Twitter, "So excited to be back in Liverpool. About to go up the town." He's taking a photo of the tower. This is as he's arriving. "Forgot to tell Peter I don't like heights." Do you seriously not like heights?
I'm not that bad, but I came around the corner. I've just had dinner with my mate, and he said, I said, "Oh, are we close to the radio station?" He said, "Yeah, it's just around the corner. I'll walk up with you." Walked around the corner, I just went, "My God, it's like some out of Gotham, you know, sort of Superman." So it looked incredible. I thought it looks very impressive. But then I went, "It's not at the top of there, is it? I'm not good." And for a minute, I suddenly had sort of Hitchcock vertigo, which I don't normally suffer from.
450 foot high.
Oh, all right.
And
don't have to repeat it.
And I call it the penis in the sky, because it's just ridiculous. And, of course, it was closed for many years. And then a movie was made here with Ian McShane about a radio station.
Oh, really?
And then somebody thought, what a great idea. Why not have a radio station?
And then that's why they put it here.
Yeah. After they saw it, there's a huge amount of contractual goings on and our old station.
Did they use the building for the shoot, for the
film?
They
used it for the shoot. It was closed. Okay. It was a restaurant, and it used to go round. So it was a revolving restaurant, and we're on the restaurant level now. People say, "Does it still go round?" I went, "No, the wires would get caught up, because so no, it doesn't."
Oh, everything's wireless these days. You'd be all right.
Never thought of that. Never thought of that. I don't know where to start. But yeah, I'll start with, first of all, you owe me the biggest thanks in the world, me and Paul O'Grady.
Oh, really?
Because we got Scylla for you.
Oh, did you? Oh, thank you so much.
She rang me up and said, "Peter, what do you think?" And I then rang Paul and I said, "Do you believe what she's just... Take it! Take it, you fool!"
Well,
and Paul said the same.
That's so interesting you said that, because I got a call... Well, I got a text from my mate saying, "I'm having dinner with Scylla Black right now." The conversation got onto television, and she said she's a massive fan of Benidorm. And he said, "Oh, my mate writes it." And she said, "Oh, you know, tell him, tell him." So he texted me. So that was all great. And was like, "Oh, my God, you know, of course we'd love to have Scylla back." So that was all sorted. And then... I don't think she'll mind me saying this. She backed out.
Oh, yes.
She backed out, as you know.
Yeah.
And then she spoke to... I didn't know she'd spoken to you. I knew that she spoke to Paul O'Grady. And she said that she also said she spoke to Cliff as well.
Oh, yeah.
Now, when you're having this conversation with her, I mean, you know her. Do you know what
well,
I mean?
Well, we were in Barbados really when you offered... When you offered her, "I'm staying with her in an apartment,"
that's
and she's saying,
"Benidorm,"
and I went, "What?" And then she walked across and spoke to Cliff.
Yeah.
And so I was there when it happened. And we're all saying, "Are you mad?
It's ridiculous.
Do it." She said, "They want to play swingers. Do it. If you want to be a swinger, do it." Wow. That's just amazing. And
so funny.
Joan Collins was around the corner.
Oh,
she was around the corner staying with the Bamfords.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I don't think she was happy that she'd been offered it and she hadn't been offered it then.
She got it before. Well, it was Jackie, first of all, that suggested Joan to be in it. And in fact, Joan knocked us back the first time as well. In fact, I think the dates didn't work. She couldn't do it. But yeah, eventually, because she was at Jackie's house in, listen to me, Jackie.
Yeah.
She was at her sister's house in LA, and Jackie said, oh, we're going to put this on after Christmas lunch, you know. She said, what's that, Benny? She said, I don't want to watch that. She said, oh, just watch one of them. Well, they watched like five episodes, literally, you know, 3 hours back to back. She loved it. And then Jackie Collins got in touch with me and said, why don't you put my sister in your show? Which for, do you know what I mean? It's been like a sort of, you know, a kind of a slow burn. You know, we're on the series 8 now. So you'd think I'd get used to these sort of things happening, but I absolutely don't. You know, it's just bizarre and amazing to have these sort of things happening.
But you've got some fabulous actors and actresses in it anyway. It's an incredibly strong cast. I know an awful lot of them. There's some really lovely people in there. Chrissy Rock's a mate. And Jeff's mother just had a mental block.
Elsie.
She produced my first panto.
Well, do you know what? There is no... I say all roads lead to Elsie Kelly.
Yeah.
Because the amount of people, you know, I mean, there's the obvious people, you know, like Claire Sweeney what's the other, the other guy?
Well, Nigel Lithgow, Wallasey Boy.
Oh, really?
Nigel was a dancer and did stuff with Elsie.
And, you know, I'll be sitting there with Elsie and she'll say, well, yes, we did a variation of this gag with Les, of course, Les Dawson. Yeah. I'm like sitting there with my jaw on the floor going, you know, she's a living legend. She's amazing.
And she does a great part. It's a lovely part. And there's a great rapport between her and Johnny.
They're just brilliant. Yeah. And, you know, to watch that, you'd say, my God, how did you get that dizzy old woman to, you know, look in the right direction sort of thing? You know Elsie. She is as sharp as a tack, you know.
Without any shadow of a doubt.
And there was a scene the other night in the show where Johnny turns up with his new girlfriend, a very stunning 6 foot, you know.
You're not going to tell me about the scene in the lift.
That was a week after, but there was a scene where she had to say, oh yeah, my son's on his way, and then look and do a double take, which was so brilliant. And there's we've got to go again on that, Elsie, on the close-up. And I thought, oh no, that one was perfect. And she did it again and again and again.
Yeah.
Perfect each time.
I loved the scene in the lift.
Oh,
I thought that was like an episode on its own. I just thought that worked so well, and the story that unfolded in the lift the finish was beautiful.
I think the reason it worked so well is because the two actors that did it, you know, really. Mm. I'm so pleased because, you know, if people only think Johnny is in adverts with a monkey, do you know what I mean? Or you know, people have sort of reputations and stuff. He was a stand-up comedian first, but he is a quality actor.
Yeah.
And obviously Elsie is just, you know, out of this world.
So what about you? What made you want to appear in it? Or were you told to?
No, well, see, it's weird because the way things happened is I left school and then I was always I always did shows as a magician because it was my hobby. And I started doing, when I was sort of like 16, 17, I was working in sort of trust house forte hotels doing what they call close-up magic, you know, with cards and coins and all that sort of business and a bit of mind reading and stuff. Anyway, so I left school with no qualifications at all, not one. So I thought, I wonder if I can do this magic thing full time. I always wanted to be an actor. So I applied for drama school. So in the year it takes for you to apply for drama school, then actually go to drama school, I was a full-time magician. Then I went to drama school. I was there for 3 years. I met Catherine Tate. And then after that, I worked as an actor for 10 years, as did Catherine. And then Catherine got, it's got a long story, a longer story short. Catherine got offered her own TV show and they said to her, who do you want to write for you? And she said, my friend Darren is quite funny. Now, any other producer would say, oh, you know, good, well done for your friend Darren. Right, now let's get some writers, you know. But he didn't. This was a guy called Jeffrey Perkins, legendary comedy producer. And he said, yeah, you know, wheel him in. Let's, you know, sort of. And she said, can I do those stories about your grandmother? And I went, yeah, of course you can.
Is that where Grand came from?
Well, it was a mixture of a couple of the main stories in the first series were literally stories I'd told Catherine and I'd completely forgotten. Because I went, what stories? It's not like I had stories about my nana that I trotted out as anecdotes, because I didn't, you know. And she said, you know that time when she said she'd not seen the woman down the road for ages and that, and she told everybody that the woman had died and stuff and that. And I went, and the punchline was like, well, I've not seen her all week sort of thing. And she told everybody the woman had died of cancer. She'd literally made up a big story in her head. And that's why it was so shocking, you know. Yeah. How could somebody say something like that? So it was half based on these stories about my nana, but the true root of the nan character for Catherine is her godmother, Nell, who I met many, many times. And so that, I said, yeah, so I wrote these down. I said, what, you mean like a monologue or with other people or what? You know, because I literally, most I'd written was a birthday card, you know. I've got no qualifications whatsoever. So that's what happened. We ended up doing two series of Catherine's show, and I was in that as well as an actor. Mm-hmm. And at the end of that, the producer Jeffrey Perkins said, "Why don't you do your own show?" And I wrote Benidorm. Now, when we went to cast Benidorm, I thought, okay, well, I can either play the husband, which was Steve Pemberton in the end, or I could play the Jeff, the Oracle, which was the Johnny Vegas part. Mm-hmm. Now, we did some casting, and Steve Pemberton, you know, League of Gentlemen, all that sort of stuff, was just fantastic. So he got the part of Mick. I said, you know, I always said if there's somebody better than me, cast them. It's all about the show. And so I thought, that's fine. I'll play the layabout, you know, quiz sort of nerdy mummy's boy. And then the casting director, Carrie Hilton, said to me, I thought about Johnny Vegas for this part. And I went, I'm a huge fan of Johnny, but he won't do this. It's like four lines per episode. There's no way he'll do it. Anyway, they sent him the script and he loved the script. And he said, yeah, I'd love to do it. So then that sort of left me without a part, but I wasn't that bothered. Anybody with a bit of sense would have gone, well, I'll write myself another part. But, you know.
That family, Steve Pemberton's family, the whole family. First of all, it's fabulous to watch a little boy grow up. It's like Curry.
Isn't that amazing?
To see the little boy, he's now a young man. And it's great to see somebody growing up on your telly in front of you.
Do you know, every year, because, you know, we start with a read-through in London, and every year we said, this is the year when Ollie Stokes, who plays Michael, this is the year Ollie comes in and goes, all right, no. And you know, he's like, shut up. Every year it was like, oh, yeah, you're all right. Yeah, it's like, it's never going to happen. Yeah. Then, like, you know, 2 series ago, he literally... No, it was just the series. Oh, I can't remember. They all mush into one. But anyway, eventually he did walk into, you know, the read-through room and was like, oh, my God. Then they're repeating series one now, I think, on Thursday night.
I've seen the
difference in him, He is a child. Yeah. He is a, you know, he was supposed to be 7. I think he was 8. Yeah. So he literally has grown up on telly.
And is it 7 coatings of makeup for our grandmother in the wheelchair?
Do you know what? When I...
what a lady.
Stunning. In fact, the last time I was here, I came to see Sheila
at
Reid.
The Royal Court.
At the Royal Court. Yeah. And I hadn't been to Liverpool for years and years and years. And I stood at the Royal Court waiting for to get my ticket. And there was two women in front of me. And one of them said, how's Sheila? And the other one went, Sheila who? And she went, you know Sheila, deaf Sheila who got shot in the face. And there was a pause and she went, oh, Sheila. It's like, how many women do you know called Sheila that are deaf and got shot in the face? That's why I love Liverpool. Yeah. It's just, every corner there's more, you know, there's new dialogue. But she is just, I remember when we went to...
Caster?
We did a general sort of casting and we saw everybody. We saw everybody. We saw Linda Barron. We saw Leslie Joseph. Mm-hmm. We saw Jean Boat. We saw
everyone,
and they were all literally sitting outside. And it's like, it sort of dawns upon you, God, they're going to make this. Do you know what I mean? Remember on the first day of shooting for the Catherine Tate show, Catherine and I stood there and sort of went, they've made it. They're making it. And then she went, yeah, but they won't show it. which kind of sums up my attitude and her attitude as well. No, we're like two peas in a pod like that. Anyway, so Sheila came in. Now, anybody who knows, I'd never heard of Sheila Reid, didn't know her, right? But she was in Laurence Olivier's company at the National Theatre. Very, very well respected.
And well spoken.
Oh, darling. She's terribly darling. So she comes in and she's sort of, she wasn't how I know Sheila now, you know, and she was dressed in a shell suit. Now, anybody that knows Sheila was like, so she came and sat down and said, oh, you know, really nice to meet you. I said, where are you from? She said, oh, Manchester. So she wasn't born in Manchester at all. She was actually born in Scotland, but then moved when she was tiny, you know, down south. So just shows you what these actors do to, you know, to get a job. But I, when I went to, first went to Spain, the show was commissioned and I'd never been to Benidorm ever. So I got on a plane and went to Benidorm because I'd only written two episodes and I had to write the others. So I got there and I had this image of this woman, Madge, in this scooter and, you know, really, really heavily tanned. And I was walking around Benidorm and I saw this German couple. And this woman wasn't in her scooter, but she was the most bizarre. She looked like a dusted truffle. She was unbelievable. And I followed her for about, it's lucky I didn't get done for, you know, stalking. I followed her for about half an hour trying to covertly take a picture of her because I thought, I can see the argument, me and the makeup woman, and me going, more makeup, more brown, darker, darker. And when she said, nobody would be like that, I said, I've got the picture. Yeah. There it is.
Clever idea. Why Benidorm? Why not Mallorca? Why not Italy? Why Benidorm?
Well, I'd never been there, as I said. So how it happened was, as I say, this comedy producer, TV producer, Jeffrey Perkins, who's no longer with us. He died very, very tragically about 5 years ago. Very suddenly. And he said, you should write your own show. And I said, what? I don't want to write the Darren Lytton show. What are you talking about? So no, just do. I want you to write a comedy narrative. So then I had to sort of pause and say, right, I don't know what that means. And he said, a story, you know, a story that goes all the way through. And I said, are you asking me to write a sitcom? He said, just write a story. Just write something, you know, that has a beginning, a middle, and an end. You know. So at that point, I started with a sketch because that's all I'd written. I'd written sketches for Catherine. So I started this sketch, and it was this couple. It was like these people in a living room, and they were having like an AGM, this annual general meeting. And there was like, it was all very officious, you know, sorry, Doreen, can you talk through the chair and all this sort of thing and blah, blah, blah. And it turned out they were swingers. Like the payoff of the sketch was they were talking about swinging and all about having sex with each other and who's going to, you know, whose turn is it to bring whatnot and all the rest of it. And so basically, I said, he rang and said, how are you getting on? I said, I've stuck. I've done this. I said, I think it's a bit dull. It's in a house, you know, it's in a suburban setting. He said, well, set it somewhere else. So I set it around a swimming pool. And he rang another week later. He said, how's it going? I said, yeah, it's good. It's better. They're on sunbeds now around a swimming pool, but I don't know where to go from here. And he just said, what, like on holiday? I said, yeah. He said, well, just imagine who else is sitting around the pool. So at that point, now, I must admit, I don't know if I'd called it Benidorm at that point or not, but I do know that the character that Jeffrey said, I think you've gone too far, was this character called Sticky Vicky. And I said to him, that's the only real character that actually exists.
So scary that, by the way. So when you went to Benidorm, you'd never been there before. What was your initial? Mm. Did you go, this is it, or did you go, oh my God, what have I done?
No, I mean, I think there was a line in the first series where he said it's like Blackpool with sun, and I'd heard about this place where all the you know, the booze was cheap. Every bar had back-to-back acts on, you know, a comedian, then a singer, and then, you know, juggler or whatever, you know, and it was all free to get in all these places. And there was an amazing beach. And, you know, but it's, I suppose it's like Blackpool as I remember it when I used to go when I was a kid, you know, in the 70s. But it's funny, when I got there, no, I didn't sort of go, this is it. We went back on a big sort of recce for locations, the point where I said, this is it, we went into this, the first hotel we went into, because, of course, we were going to ask, we needed to base it in a swimming pool, because, like, you know, the last comedy set on holiday in Spain was Duty Free. Well, that was shot at Yorkshire TV in the studio in Leeds. So this, we were trying to go for a very different look. We went to this place, and you walk through the hotel, this the Sol Pelicanos, you walk through to the back, and there's the pool with the bar, the sort of coconut matting sort of, you know, bar in the pool. And I walked through, and I had a moment of, a really weird moment of, oh, this, I'm not saying this is like it, this is it. The bar there, the shape of the pool, the colour of the sunbeds. I was a bit freaked out, actually. You know what I mean? I was like...
So the picture you had in your mind, it came to life.
I mean, you know, you don't... Your mind plays tricks. You know what I mean? I used to be a magician, so I know that, you know, I've done... I used to do a trick where you used to put a bottle through the table. Now, I know people that say, you know, I've seen people do that before, but not how you did it. You didn't put, you know, a napkin around it or, you know... And it's like, I did, but they don't remember it like that. So it's probably my mind playing tricks on me. But to me, that was how I imagined it when I wrote it.
Going to have to go back to magic in a minute. I've got to talk about that. Let me take a break. Everyone's going mad on Facebook and Twitter. Darren is with us, who created Benidorm, and Catherine Tate. I just love Catherine. I love that character so much. Let's go back to magicians. Okay. Were you a Tommy Cooper fan?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, who wasn't? Yeah,
he was just amazing.
Incredible. And, you know, I've now worked with so many people that worked with Tommy Cooper. In fact, one of my first jobs, I did a TV series called Perfect World, and my wife in that was Daryl Pertwee, John Pertwee's daughter. And Tommy Cooper was John Pertwee's best mate. So the Tommy Cooper story she had, I mean, just amazing.
Well, I worked eight weeks of my career with him, which I had to look after him as a host of the Shakespeare. But with him, my favourite story, and I got a million stories, but you will understand this and you picture this. So imagine the Shakespeare, it's like the Palladium, huge place it was, burnt down sadly. He's on stage and his timing was perfect. You messed his timing up, you got a telling off later in no uncertain manner. But he had me for 45 minutes walk, first of all, at the back of the stage with an empty glass. So I was outrageously dressed because I used to be really outrageous the way I dressed. So walk at the back of the stage with it, with a glass of water. And then in my own time, but picking the right time, walk back with it empty. And he'd go, what's going on? And somebody just walked back, and it went on for 40. Water off, water off, water off. But at given time. And the punchline was, come here, what are you doing? I said, it's all right for you, but my dressing room's on fire. and the audience, because
so you were
Tommy,
part of Tommy Cooper's act.
I was, well, when he came to the Shakespeare in Liverpool, I had to do that. That was it. And amazing. I had to watch him because I've got the most outrageous laugh. I had to watch him. And if I didn't, he used to get angry because his laugh would make him laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was a complex man. But what a great magician, which was the point I was making.
Yeah.
What a great magician. Yeah. And the bottle through the table is I go to Little Italy in Soho to Luigi's, and there are two magicians there that do it. And I still, and I was going to ask you off how it works. I don't want to know.
It's
an amazing trick.
Fabulous trick. And also when, you know, that thing of, you know, just talking about, you know, sort of remembering stuff, you know, when you, I know that, you know, we live in a world of anecdotes and it always makes me laugh. Sherry Hewson, who's in the show, every time, she won't mind me saying this, every time she tells an anecdote, there's a bit extra on top.
Yeah. Oh, yes, you've got
in the end, it's fantastic.
What did you do to Sherry with the...
Which time? We've done so much.
No, this last one was...
Oh, with the Botox face.
Botox. Brilliant. I was screaming with laughter. I thought that worked really, really well. Can you believe it's 8 series?
No, of course not. No, after the second series, I did like a sort of... To give out with the, you know, you get a call sheet every day with the people's pickup times and all the rest of it. And attached to the call, the last call sheet at the end of the second series, I did like, on my computer, I did like a sort of comic strip thing with pictures from the thing. And there was a baby. Well, we had twins for the baby Coolio in the first in the second series. And there was a picture of one of the twins holding one finger up, and I just put on the bottom one more series, in saying that, you know, if, you know, if we could get one more series, that'd be like, that'd be amazing, you know, to have three. Well, we're going into our, you know, I'm writing the eighth series now.
But
so it's just crazy.
Does it put you under a lot of pressure? Because you've done so much finding storylines, or are the characters so strong that you can just make it work?
Do you know what? I'll be completely honest with you, Pete. This is the probably, because I'm a glass half empty sort of person, so I'm like, everybody's going to hate it anyway, I don't care. Do you know what I mean? Everybody's going to hate it, so I'm not, you know. And it's a defence mechanism, isn't it? You know, if I say it's rubbish first, anybody else says it's rubbish, it's no surprise and it's no skin off my nose sort of thing. But of course I care. This series, you know, we all know that the Garvey family have left, which I've got in for a lot of stick about, but which people saying, why did you sack the Garveys? I've never sacked anybody in my life, you know. Though the actors that play that part, you know, they're away from their families, you know, 4 months of the year. 7 years is a long time, you know, to do something. Yeah. And they've gone. So now we're having a new family in series eight. And we're also having a couple of other new characters as well. So, yeah, this time I'm at a loss to be able
but
to
also
say
that. Yeah, that family that have just left, when you think of them as actors, oh my word, we've got Downton, we've got Steve, we have got a huge wealth of talent with them.
When you think about, I mean, I think Steve Pemberton is a genius anyway. He, you know, he's writing as a writer and an actor. He is basically, he's what I would have loved to have been, you know, an actor. Well, I suppose I'm an out-of-work actor, writer. He's Steve's so clever. He puts himself, you know, in lead parts in all his own things. His writing is genius. Siobhan Finneran, you know, say Downton Abbey, Rita Sue and Bob Two, from everything, she's just stunning. Sheila Reid, you know, classically trained National Theatre actress. It's just, they're incredible, and to lose them is a massive, massive big deal. The one episode this series, which I really put a lot into, I mean, I put a lot into all of them, but was episode three. The Garveys left in episode two. I knew that series three had to go bang with the jokes, with the action stuff happening, so people hopefully by the end of it went, oh, hang on, weren't the family in it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, from the feedback I get anyway, I've got, I think we, you know, we more than got away with it, I think.
Putting Benidorm to one side for a second, what was your opinion on The Spa?
The Spa?
Yeah.
My show, The Spa. I really, it was one of the best experiences of my life, making the show. I didn't think it was perfect. I thought it definitely deserved another series. Definitely. You know, most series that start off, you look at things like Blackadder, Only Fools and Horses, a lot of big shows, you watch the first series, they're unrecognisable. In those days, they gave a series, three series to bed in, two to bed in, and if you got it right by the third, great. If you didn't, you were gone. You know, Sky, I've not got a big problem with Sky Living, was the channel, but they basically said, this is like a two episode. They didn't commission two series, but they said, this is a two series. We can't judge anything on the first series. We, you know, they get so few viewers. Mm-hmm. The people listening, most of them won't have even heard of The Spa because it was on such an obscure channel. But, you know, I was really annoyed that they didn't give us another series when basically from the outset they said, you know, of course, we can't go on. The fact that we had, like, you know, three times the amount of viewing figures they had for their, you know, documentaries on making tartan kilts or whatever the hell they were doing before then. I was really, really annoyed about
that. I
get
cross about this anyway, I, on the periphery and seeing it. Mm. You see a series that the public like and some idiot, one person usually, makes a decision, no, not going with it again. And I don't understand it. And I remember the best example I ever give, many, many, many years ago, I was working on the road as a stand-up comic. And I was down in Brighton. I was working with Cannon and Ball. Mm. It was just before they cracked it. And there was a TV producer came to see them. And it was at Jenkins in Brighton. I always remember, it was a hard nightclub. Mm. And they had a hard night. They didn't die. They had a hard night. Mm. And he went, I'm not using them. He should have seen further than that. Yeah. He should have seen what everybody else saw, yeah. and that makes me angry.
Well, you know, how many people turned down the Beatles, you know, it's that classic thing, isn't it? I think it's great to have... The thing about the Spa is, I suppose they... Unfortunately now, what people want from me is, you know, Benidorm in the UK. And although I think the Spa was... I don't know if it was like Benidorm. It certainly was... there were a lot of jokes in it, do you know what I mean? Mm. And it was... fairly sort of farcical characters, you know. I mean, the thing about Benidorm is I think that's evolved as a series, and I love how it has evolved. If I can say something about the first series of Benidorm, I really liked it, but the direction of it, it actually made Benidorm look like a place I wouldn't want to go to. And that was never my intention. Mm-hmm. You know, shots of Johnny putting out fag ends in an egg yolk and that was never written, you know. That was the director. Who we changed after the first series. Sandy Johnson, the director, who has been from sort of series two onwards, more or less. You know, he brought the sun into that show, you know. And, you know, I've always said for the show, it's like it has to be improbable, not impossible. So, you know, you can't have somebody levitating. You can't have somebody... If they're going to do the Village People, you know, on stage, the characters, there has to be enough time for them... Do you know what I mean? To have gone away, got the costumes and done a few little moves.
You've got a nice reputation as a hard man, but a caring man. It must have been very difficult to write and see the Swingers knowing sadly in real life he's passed away. That must have been really...
Yeah, difficult, really difficult. Kenny, I had a lunch with Kenny Ireland before the filming of this Series 7. And he said, I've got cancer. And he said, I've actually had cancer for 10 years. He said, prostate cancer. And first thing I did was after we'd had this sort of meeting... Because Kenny said, I can't do the whole series, you know, I can only probably do a couple of episodes, but I'm definitely doing a couple of episodes. And I went, look, Kenny, you've got to do what is good for your health. Do you know what I mean? Forget the show, just do what's good for your health. Blah, blah, blah. So then I got in touch with my mate, Dr. Christian. And he said, most men die with prostate cancer rather than of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kenny had it for 10 years and stuff, but, you know, he knew it had moved to his bones, and you know, you can't have your bones taken out, you know. He was determined he was going to do two episodes. So I wrote him in the first two episodes, and then he said, his health deteriorated a bit, and he said, the doctor said, I can't fly. I said, okay, no worries. He said, well, look, he came to the read through and everything, and then after that, the doctor said, no, you shouldn't be flying anywhere. So he said, I tell you what, if you write a scene, maybe like on Skype, phone call or something like that, he said, I'll sit in the garden with the Panama hat on, put a couple of potted palms behind me, we'll do it like that. Brilliant. Anyway, went further down the line, Kenny deteriorated a bit more, and he said, look, why don't we do it as a phone call? And anyway, blah, blah, you know, it went on and went on. And, you know, sadly, you know, we lost Kenny. But it's, you know, it happened before with Jeffrey Hutchins, I don't know, who played Mel, you know. Yeah. Jeff died quite suddenly. I'd already written the Christmas special with him in it, so I had to do a complete rewrite of the Christmas special with him not there, you know. Yeah. So it's not as if... I always say about this show, because, you know, Jeffrey Perkins, our producer, died in terribly tragic circumstances. He fell into the road and got run over by a truck. The autopsy later on said that he had, I can't remember if it was an aneurysm or his heart, or he'd gone before he went into the road, thank goodness. But, you know, our makeup designer was murdered by her husband. Our casting director, Carrie Hilton, who I mentioned before, she died of cancer not long after that, as did our editor. So in, I wake up in the morning and, you know, I look, if I'm not in the Times obituary column, I go to work sort of thing. Yeah. It's the stories of, in fact, I'm writing a book at the moment, hopefully to go out next year, called The Benidorm Diaries. Some of the stories are just phenomenal and bizarre. You know, the time when the Christmas special was held to ransom. Somebody found a USB drive. You know, these days everything's on a microchip, isn't it? They found a USB drive with a rough cut of the Christmas special on it, and they rang up and said, we've got this, we want money for it. And so we were supposed to meet these people, said, we'll call back. And it was like, you know, it was like a movie. They called back in that night and they said, yeah, we've got it, we want 200 euros for it. And I went, 200 euros? 200 euros? Are you just spent that on lunch? Are you taking the... You know, I was furious that they wanted so little money for it. And they said, and we said, you haven't got it. You know, you're idiots. You're obviously amateurs. You haven't even got it. And they said, we have got it. We can even tell you some of the jokes in it. And I went, that's no good. I've never used, you got them out of a Christmas cracker. There's no proof you've got it. They went, Sue Pollard's in it. I said, Sue Pollard's singing every karaoke place in Benidorm for the last 2 weeks. Anyway, Ed, I won't tell you how that ended because I'm going to put it in the book.
Good. Will you say goodbye to Kenny or will you just leave it?
The episode tomorrow night, I don't know how to describe this.
Watch it.
Well, yeah, do you know what? I'll tell you what, the character of Donald appears in tomorrow night's episode. Right. That's what I'll say.
Right. Great. Can you believe the way Benidorm's been received?
What do you mean? What is it, badly or good?
Don't forget, Pete.
I am not a public face of the show.
No.
Right? So people don't know. If people are talking about Benidorm in a pub and I can overhear it, that's the only time I ever, which is very rare, you know what I mean? Obviously, if I'm with a member of the cast, they tell people, but I don't hear all. I did a really stupid thing at the start of this series that I started reading things on the internet, you know, not my own Twitter and stuff. Now, you know yourself, do you know what I mean? It's just pointless.
Wipe it out.
Pointless. Why would you do that? Yeah. Well, I won't say which actress. One of the actresses in the show, I was having dinner with the other night, and she said she Googled, she's not a big, you know, technology sort of fan, whatever. So she Googled herself once. She said she thought she'd been kicked in the stomach. Mm. She said the absolute filth that people write, disgusting things people write about, you know, that have written about her. And she said she's never looked at anything again.
Mm. One of the biggest problems that you would have in Benidorm, to ask you that in a minute, I've got to show you these. These are the first critics to come out about 50 Shades of Grey.
Okay.
More MS than SM.
Okay.
And spanking grey flop.
Oh, so, all right.
The reason I read that to you is, when somebody criticises any of your work, do you get upset?
I used to say no, and of course anybody that does say no is a big fat liar, because at the end of the day, you're saying, you know, I always remember when Catherine Tate did stand-up comedy, I used to have to get so drunk before I went because I was sick with nerves, you know, standing up there, and that's an immediate reaction. I'm going to say something, you know yourself, you know, stand-up comedy, you stand there, I'm going to say something, at the end of the sentence, if you don't laugh, that's a fail. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the thought of that just is horrific. Now, if you look on the internet, I'm on Twitter, so like, I assume most of the people that follow me on Twitter are probably like what I do, or else why would they follow me? So you can read literally 100, after every episode, there's probably, I don't know, 500 messages from people. I'd say there's every 100 comments, positive comments, there's one negative one.
Yeah.
So what do you remember?
Yeah.
The negative one.
And you know, as a magician, when you're doing stand-up, there can be 3,000 people in that audience and you just see that one person that's not laughing or not reacting. And that's the only one you play to.
Sitting playing with their phone.
And that's the one you play to.
Yeah.
It's the most terrible thing on this earth. Awful. Now, I believe the biggest problem filming Benidorm is The public, because they all want to see it and watch. I believe they're hysterical.
They do. It is funny. Do you know what? In the first series, of course, nobody knew what we were doing. And I remember we were doing a night shoot, and it was a, if anybody remembers from the first series, Matteo, you know, Jake.
Yeah, nice man. Nice man.
He had to get slapped in the face by Abigail Crottenden, who played Kate, about, because, of course, you know, you do take after take. And he got slapped. His face was red raw. He got slapped about 60 times. I mean, he counted them. He'll tell you how many. And so there's a fella watching this, and then he obviously could take no more of it. We weren't blocking like a big public. It was at night, so we weren't blocking a big public area. And he came down, and he was absolutely drunk. And he came down, and he said, "I've paid £400 for this bloody holiday, and I'm standing here watching that stupid... What's it getting smacked in the face? What if my kid wants to play in the Fred Flintstone playground," which we were opposite? And we were just like, it's 20 past 11. Why does your son want to be playing? And they were furious. Yeah. You know, we take off half the pool as well.
I was going to say, is it actually open then to the public?
It's all open. So if you look in the very deep background, when like the little out-of-focus blobs in the background, and well, the blobs in the foreground are our actors, the out-of-focus blobs in the background, they're real holidaymakers on holiday. So that first series, if we were like during the day, people come and say, "My son can't, you know, be in that part of the pool," and that we used to launch the secret weapon. Of course, the secret weapon was Johnny Vegas. He's the only one anybody had ever heard of, you know. So we pushed him out into the pool, and he went out and signed a few things and had pictures taken. That now people ring the hotel and say, "When are they filming? We want to be on holiday then."
That's interesting.
If you think about it, you know, it's like going to Disneyland and seeing Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
You go there and you see Madge in a scooter, you know. And the brilliant thing is, over the last couple of years, when we're sort of, you know, out and about on our sort of leisure time in Benidorm, people now go to Benidorm on parties, like stag nights and stuff, dressed as their favourite character.
Yeah.
So you have Tony Maudsley, another great Scouser in the show. They're all dressed as Kenneth in the little hot pants and, you know, vests with slogans on stuff. One of them's, you know, got the brown makeup on the scooter and stuff. It's hysterical.
It's an amazing series. I can't believe the way... What you've done is, you see, because I work Benidorm as a comic.
Right.
So what you've done is you've brought it to life. And there's not one story you could say, "That's over the top. That doesn't happen." Every single thing you do happens. The people hog the bar, hog the food, will not go out and spend money because it's free there. So what's the point?
It makes me laugh when people say, you know, every now and again I do a little cameo in the show, just a couple of lines or whatever, you know.
Didn't you do the chauffeur?
Yes, I'm Joan Collins' chauffeur in it, Elvis. And a few series ago, Steve Pemberton, his character Mick had got cramp in his legs, and he was sort of all over the place coming out of the police station. And I sort of turned to him as walking past and said, "It's people like you that give Benidorm a bad name." And I got that line from people saying about the show. And it's like, you think my show gave Benidorm a bad name? I'm not giving nobody. I've never ever in the show said a bad thing about Benidorm as a tourist attraction. Do you know what I mean? As a holiday destination, our characters are mad. A lot of them, you know, they're crazy. But you have that in all TV shows. You know, we got an award a couple of years ago for, and there's a plaque outside the nightclub where we film Neptunes. That's a nightclub called Morgan's Tavern. And if you come out of Morgan's Tavern, there's a plaque on the wall that the town hall very kindly did for us. And it says, "Presented to Darren Lytton for his TV show Benidorm for services to tourism for Benidorm."
That's great.
So, you know, anybody that says, you know, the show gives Benidorm a bad name, they're joking. Everywhere in Spain, you know, tourism is down. Benidorm, up.
Will you stay with me a little bit longer?
I'd love to, yeah.
Great. We've got somebody who doesn't do interviews very often. Darren is quite an amazing man. Darren, why don't you do interviews very often?
Why don't I do them? Because, well, they've stopped asking. Yeah, because at the beginning they did. Yeah, at the beginning they did ask, because, and also it's a given thing that when you do your press week on a TV show, you know, it's in Spain, the press come to us. So all the magazines and the tabloids and everything, they all their reporters are there. And from, to be honest with you, I saw an article that Catherine didn't even do an article for them. I think she answered one question and they made a full article of just pure rubbish. They just, you know, and people read stuff and go, well, there's no smoke without fire. They can't just make things up. You know, they do. Of course they make things up. If they have to pay somebody 20 grand in court, that's nothing to them, you know. Yeah. Now, I'm not, you know, I'm not Robert De Niro. Do you know what I mean? Nobody wants to make up stories about me. But part of that is because I've sort of fabricated that. Do you know what I mean? I've made sure that I'm not in the public eye for this show. And I'm pleased that... Also, I don't think I'm very good at it.
Are you a private person?
No, and not in as much as that. I don't know. I don't think I am. I don't know.
Mm.
See, I don't. The reason I don't do interviews is not because I don't want people asking me questions that I don't want to answer. Do you know what I mean? I'll do. In fact, I think I've done in the last, for the whole of this the series, seven series so far, I think I've done two other interviews, both on the radio. One to some mates in Spain who have a show on a very small station, very good station. And the other one was another one in Benidorm. Yeah. So I like to support Benidorm, you know, I like to put local acts in the show, you know, singers and stuff. I like to show local places in Benidorm where people can go. I love the idea that somebody goes on holiday in Benidorm and can do like a tour of all the, you know, of the locations that we've used and stuff, and outside of Benidorm too. But I think I'm too honest. You know what I mean? I know what a massive listenership you have, so I'm being a little bit careful with what I say.
I think it's interesting. I don't think you mentioned your words, which is great, and I think that's really important. Did you meet Sticky Vicky?
Yeah, we've had her in the show.
Yeah, but
fabulous. I mean, the
reason I mention that is, were you shocked when you first found out what she did? And this is what we're going to be very careful about what we talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, basically, Sticky Vicky is a magician. She's in her 70s, and she has a lot of props, but she doesn't pull them out of a top hat.
No.
We'll leave it there.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're... When I was a magician...
She flicks ping pong balls.
That's the one thing she doesn't do.
Doesn't she?
No, she doesn't.
I never knew that.
She does produce a Christmas tree fully lit, but she...
I'm going for a walk.
She's amazing. I've been going on to Tiger Aspect, the production company that make Benidorm, for years, in that I want to make a documentary about Sticky Vicky. She came from Argentina to Benidorm with... not a penny, with her young daughter, and not a penny. And she ended up marrying the chief of police, and she did this act where every year she says she's going to retire, and every year the bars pay her more money. She does 6-7 shows a night. And it's just, you know, I won't go into any sort of graphic detail, but the first thing she does is comes on stage and takes all her clothes off. And she's a woman in her 70s.
How does she look naked?
Well, certain parts of her are only about 10 years old. Right. Two parts anyway. But she sort of looks... I mean, you know, I'm struggling for words.
Just one second. My producer, do you know what we're talking about, by the way? Oh, right. Okay. He looked a bit blank.
I knew about Sticky Vicky. This is what I say about the producer said. You know, the only thing I don't believe in this thing is the because it was in series
Christmas
one.
Christmas tree,
No, is the woman pulling the flags of all nations in her act. And I said, well, oddly enough, that's the only thing that's actually true. She is a magician in Benidorm. And, you know, I'm not an expert on the female anatomy.
Mm.
So when I saw Sticky Vicky come on stage, take all her clothes off, and then start producing these, it was, I mean, you're just lost for words. Yeah. What I really enjoy is taking people to see Sticky Vicky, you know, guest actors in the show and stuff, and I don't take pictures of Sticky Vicky, I take pictures of their face.
Yeah.
I've got a picture of Sheridan Smith, and she's like a snake. Her jaw has dislocated. It's literally about a foot away from her face. It's just unbelievable.
Tell me, of all the Benidorm stories that you've done, is there one story that you can say, I'll never forget that? Is that a difficult question or not?
That we've done in the show?
Yeah.
A lot of them are based on true things. You know, we have the SAs, the supporting actors, what you used to call extras in the old days. You know, the people that, like in Crossroads Motel, that they nod and shake their heads sort of when they're checking out. So if they say something, you have to pay them more money. So we have all these people, and of course we'd sit and chat to them between takes. The stories that I've had from them, I've had to dilute to put in the show. I'm stalling now because I'm trying to think of a particular story. They all merge into one. I can't think. It's so funny when people say, on the rare occasion that people, that like the show, that find out what I do for a living, they always say, oh my God, my favourite is so-and-so, and I always go, oh, I completely forgot about that scene.
Well, you would do though with 8 series. So there's another series.
We start filming in late March.
Wow.
So quite soon.
How long will it take? 4 months?
It will take, actual days shooting, it will be about 3.5 months. Long time to be away from home.
And have you got it all written now, or does a lot of it happen while you're doing it?
There's one or two ends to clear up. I'm saying that because if anybody's listening,
there's quite a few listening. We've actually put a live link on so they can listen. So most of the actors are listening to find out what their storylines.
It's funny, they actually say, oh, what am I doing this series? And I say, I wish I knew.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit behind with the scripts this year.
But do you, on the day, ever change? I know it's difficult because camera works and shots, et cetera, et cetera. But you ever say, no, we're going to change this because it will work better this way?
The weather plays a big part. Yeah. You know, it does rain in Benidorm sometimes. And if we've got a scene that's outside and we know from, you know, it's so funny, we pay for a separate weather report from some, meteorological place in Spain, which is always wrong. So I don't know that. If they could, you know, when they hang a stone out and say, if it's wet, it's raining, if it's dry, it's sunny. I don't know why they pay for a separate weather report, but we move stuff inside and that. I tell you, there was one thing in the other night, you know, you were saying that you enjoyed the episode in the lift, which, Johnny and Elsie Kelly were so incredible. There's a line at the end of that, and I don't mind telling you this, I'm very, very proud of the fact that the last line, when, after going through so many series of saying, she's not me, ma'am, she's me PA, her says me PA. There's this
and
scene.
And on the when the
he got on the dance floor, he said, oh, I can ask you a question. He said, yeah, he says, do you want to dance? And they go up and dance.
Her face was a picture.
Well, that was the end of the scene, right? And then Elsie Kelly's husband, Gordon, he leant across and said, do you know what he should say here? And I thought, oh, don't start with that. It's not a free-for-all. People chipping in and that. I didn't say that to Gordon. He's such a nice guy. But he should turn and say, she's not me PA, she's me ma'am.
Yeah.
And that came from Gordon.
Yeah.
And I think that's the only time we've ever had a line that wasn't
But that
written.
Was great.
Brilliant.
Because it did set the whole thing.
It also sort of bookended it. Do you know what I mean? He starts off with this thing, she's not me, mum, she's me, PA, that sort of thing.
Are you a precious writer, like your words?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. It's, you know, Victoria Wood, she's got a reputation of being very particular about the lines, about the words. And the thing is, it's like the words... she says, I've thought about the order of every single word. Why should I let you change it? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's right. It's not to say that if we get in the situation and something's not working, we had a line that Kenny Ireland, bless him, he just couldn't say it. He couldn't, and we did like 10, 12 takes, and he couldn't say it. And it was, I can't remember the line myself now. So in the end, we just had to change the line.
Yeah.
But we did sort of say, no, you know, just words, Kenny, you know, keep at it.
Yeah.
Bless him. But,
so yeah, are you a hard taskmaster?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, we don't have arguments, no. Do you know what I mean, on set, but...
So schedule pretty hard?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm an employee like the rest of them. You know, people sort of say about my position in the show. I mean, obviously, I created the show and I'm what they call an executive producer, which is purely a sort of on an artistic level. Do you know what I mean? But then again, you know, the artistic side of things does spill into the sort of, you know, financial side of things. When people say you can only have 10 extras and it's supposed to be a nightclub, it's supposed to be, you know, in a holiday, you've seen the size of the hotel, are we really going to spread 12 people out? So I'll stand my ground and say, we need 30. And so we'll give you 20. Do you know what I mean? So it's that sort of thing we have all the time.
Do you not think, though, that's creeping into the business? It makes me angry. In Panto, I'm always in the Empire, and it's always £1 million production. But the accountants will say, I need that scene cutting out. Well, hang on, it doesn't work without that scene. No. That's the way things are going these days. Stage shows, apart from the mega shows in London, are going like that, especially when they go out on tour.
Of course it is. And the thing is with, you know... If people only knew, you know, we sit there and people say, you can't have this, you can't have that. You can't, and it's like, hang on a minute. We're not doing a show on BBC Four for 100,000 viewers. Do you know what I mean? This is about as prime time as you get. 9 o'clock, ITV, Friday night. And you're saying that we can't afford something ridiculous. Do you know what I mean? It really gets on my nerves. And I fight a lot of battles, you know, in meetings, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Rather than on the on set.
When you first came in, you said it's great to be back in Liverpool. What's your connection with Liverpool?
My first connection with Liverpool is that our family went on holiday to Wales. And after driving from Hull for about 7 hours, we realised that we'd been in Liverpool for the last 2 hours. We were going to the Lake District. Beg your pardon. And so that was the first time I went to Liverpool. But I think the show has got quite a big connection. If you think of the people we've had in the show, you know, Margie Clark, Cilla, Tony Maudsley, Michelle Butterley, I don't know if you know, who was in one of the series, Lewis Emmerich.
Yeah.
You know, we keep going back to Liverpool. I think it's just got, there's a quality. You know, Arthur Askey said you have to be a comedian to live in Liverpool. There's just that quality of it's just real. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's real, but it's like that conversation I said at the beginning when I was waiting in the queue at the theatre. I mean, if you wrote that in a screenplay, people would say, but that's ridiculous. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You'd never hear that on the street. The best dialogue I ever hear is on the street in Liverpool.
Darren, what advice would you give? There's many, many people listening now would love to be you as a writer. Mm. First of all, give us some advice as a writer, then give us some advice as an actor, because both are getting very hard these days.
Well, you know, I was incredibly fortunate to make a living as an actor for 10 years before Catherine's show. And to be honest, the only reason I made ends meet was that between every proper acting job, I did a lot of TV commercials. I everything from crisps to chips to batteries to heaven knows what. And that's what saw me through. So you've got to, you know, Willie Russell came to my drama school, the Central School of Speech and Drama, and somebody said the same question. What would you give advice in one sentence to an aspiring actor? And he said, learn to type. And that's just reality. You know what I mean? You've got to multitask. You've got to be able to say, okay, I'm an actor. That's what I want to do. But you've got to admit, not defeat, you know, you've got to win the war, basically. You know what I mean? So some battles you're going to lose. You're going to have to get a part-time job. You know, you're going to have to... As a writer, the one thing that I would say is... I write comedy, so that... I'd say, don't try and make anybody laugh except yourself. just do what makes you laugh. Don't write something. Don't write what you think people want.
It's interesting you say that. First TV I ever did in my life, somebody says, if you make the cameraman laugh, you're halfway there. What a dreadful piece of advice. Because, of course, they're doing a job. They're not in the slightest interested in you. And that was the... And, of course, I fell apart because they weren't laughing. So, I mean, I'd forgotten about that. You know, that's... Now, tell me, when you write, are you... A lonely writer? Are you a disciplined writer? Are you an angry writer?
I find it so difficult. You know, this is not the job I chose. Somebody asked me to write, and then somebody else asked me to write something else, and they're still asking me. At no point did I ever, you know, have aspirations to earn a living from writing. The fact is that, you know, it's completely eclipsed my acting career, which, you know, I'll be completely honest, I made a living from being an actor, but I was never in the position where I would get offered acting jobs, you know. It was always scrabbling around, auditioning with 50 other people, you know. What I have to do now when I'm writing is forget that 6 million people are going to be watching it. I'm in a room on my own. I've got an office in Soho, and I can't have the radio on. I can't have any music. I've not been able to work there recently because they're drilling the road outside my office. So I need absolute silence. Really fortunate to have a place in Spain now. So I actually go, as John Sullivan used to do. You knew when John was struggling, you know, only fools and horses. He used to go to Spain and just be alone.
Interesting you say that. Right now there are hundreds of thousands of students listening, because students love this program, and they come up to me afterwards and say, thank you very much, we got our degree because of you. How can you write, do 10,000 words while you're listening to radio? And I have to have a complete quiet room with no disturbance and no so I am with you on that one.
It's funny because you said before that you prefer to dictate. You know, I've literally in the last sort of, I've not done it yet, but I'm really considering that. I worked with Barry Humphries for a few days on something that he was doing. I can't remember, they were sketches for something. I think they were for Australia or for America, I can't remember. But he didn't write a word. He had his PA there and he wrote everything down. So I'm thinking maybe that's the way forward, because I'll be honest, I'm struggling at the moment.
It's interesting. I interviewed a lady fascinating lady, who's just written a book, and she worked for Alan Bleasdale. And she worked when Alan had a bad back. Oh. And in fact, she took dictation for Alan because he couldn't stand still. He couldn't do anything. And she said she learnt more working with him then than she. And in a way, she said it was very sad about his back, but by word, did it help me. So it's interesting. It's interesting. So series 8 is coming out.
Yeah.
It's still loved.
Well, not till next year.
No, but it's still loved.
Apparently.
Yeah, it's still loved. What secret desire? To finish off, what secret desire for me, would you like to do? Yeah,
People have said for the last few years about doing a movie of Benidorm. I don't want to do a movie of Benidorm. I won't ever do a movie of Benidorm. Obviously, if the production company who own the copyright to the show, if they want to do it, then that's up to them. I don't want to do that. After when this series ends, or my involvement with the series ends, I'm gonna go to Spain and I'm gonna sit in my garden, and I'm just gonna wait to get an idea for a great play. And I'm hopefully, I say this every time, that I'm gonna write a part for myself, and I'm gonna do a play. I think that's the thing that I would...
Straight play or comedy?
I don't know. You know, we talked about the scene in the lift with Elsie and Noreen and the Oracle. And that I was a bit worried about that, because I remember it was only when I was halfway through writing it, I realised that quite an iconic scene in Only Fools and Horses was in a lift. you remember that with Del Boy? No, no. There's an episode. Weirdly enough, I didn't see it when it went out, but there is quite a sort of, you know, because John was great at putting pathos into his show, and there was a very, you know, serious, tragi-comedy sort of scene in the lift. And I thought, oh, no, are people going to think that, you know...
No, I didn't even know. Oh, see, I love American writers for that, because they can make you laugh and make you cry next second. And that's what I loved about that lift scene. I was shocked at that lift scene. I enjoyed it that much, because I wasn't expecting it.
Well, I hope you didn't think it was out of place. Do you know what I mean? I think it still came from the characters. Perfect. Do you know what? The show was nominated for a BAFTA, the first series, and I was at the BAFTAs. We didn't win, but there was a director, very, very well-known comedy director, who I'd worked with, I'd done a commercial with a couple of years before. I did a couple of commercials with him. Anyway, he said, he was a bit drunk at the bar, and he said, see, the problem is, he said, this, your show is not going to go anywhere. It's not got legs because there's no heart. And I thought, if you think that there's no heart in my show, you've watched a different show to me. Do you know what I mean? For me, heart in a show isn't two people telling that they love each other. It's the mother seeing somebody have a go at her mother and her running across and headbutting her. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Defending her family. Yeah. That, to me, is heart. Do you know what I mean? I'd much rather... and it's like the Christmas special of Benidorm. I really think that the one, if the show has one strength, I'm not great at sort of giving myself compliments, you know, but I will say that the one thing the character has, and apart from brilliant actors and a great production team, the one thing that the show's always had in its favour is really good characters. You know I can write jokes and I know I can write characters, interesting characters, so hopefully... That'll see me through. But, you know, if it all goes up in the air and I have to go back doing crisp commercials, so be it. You know, I've had a brilliant time.
Was Joan difficult?
No.
Joan Collins?
No, she wasn't. Do you know what? And Joan is, it's bizarre to say it, but she's turned into a mate. And I was in Las Vegas a couple of months ago with her. She was doing her one-woman show there. And... it's quite obvious to me that the reason... I mean, Joan has got a bit of a reputation as being a diva. I should hope so too. She's Joan Collins, you know. But I think all people like, you know, like Scylla, Joan and that, they wanted to be in the show. They're not going to come in shouting the odds. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They wanted to be in the show. So, you know, and I was in Las Vegas with Joan, Jerry Lewis and Debbie Reynolds. And I just thought... What am I doing here? It's ridiculous.
First time I interviewed Joan Collins, I'll never forget this long.
Was she horrible?
It was fabulous. It was about a book she was doing, and it was on the phone.
Yeah.
And I'd met her in Barbados at a party. She didn't remember me, but I did meet her at the Bamfords. And it was live. And I said, so the book with you? She went, just a minute, darling. I've told you the red dress, you stupid bitch, the red dress. Sorry, what did you ask? And I went, well, I was hysterical at that. I just loved her for that.
Well, don't forget, Joan, you know, however old she is, we were having, the last time we had dinner with her in London, I said, you know, the thing is, Joan, I said, I know people say it, but, I mean, you look, I mean, people would never believe that you're, and she said, we don't say the number. We don't say the number. So, you know, however old she is, 81, she knows exactly who she is. She knows exactly what reputation she's got. And she's very, very funny. And I'm pretty sure she plays the part of Joan Collins because people love it.
Are we going to have some big stars in the last series? Are you? Well, In the next series,
we haven't cast it yet.
Oh, right.
No, we haven't. We haven't even cast the new family. Well, do you know what? I probably shouldn't say this. We have done castings of the family, and we're now, because you know everybody thinks it's you know how many mates I've got who are actors. You know, can I be in the show? Can I be in the show? It's not up to me. Obviously, I have a big say, and I can stand my ground and stuff. But I don't pay anybody. ITV. IT, especially with the new family, ITV have a massive say. But we have got a couple of people. I wish I could say, but nobody's been booked yet. But there's one guy in particular. Oh my God, I'll be so excited.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, we talked about Bob Cannon and Ball. Yeah. We've tried to get Bobby Ball in the show for the last 3 years. Yeah. He's always
good people are always busy. Loving him, man.
He's great, isn't he?
I love him with Sally. And
see, the problem
I
is,
love that.
That's by the same production company, Tiger
Aspect.
They are,
yes.
And they won't release him from that. Yeah. You know.
Well, I went and spent 2 days with them on set because I know everyone and lovely Ted.
Yeah.
Who I'm the spokesman for Ted. I'm giving all the reports from the hospital.
Oh, yeah.
So he's off his head on morphine right now.
Oh, he'll love
as
that.
We speak. I have just enjoyed and wanted to do this interview for so long. You have no idea. You're a very, very interesting man. They've gone crazy on Twitter. I haven't even looked because I've never taken my eyes off you. I haven't looked, but I know there'll be lots of questions. To everybody out there, I'm sorry. To the cast members who are listening, have they got a job? That's what they're asking.
Of course. I don't know where, but they've got one.
Ten, thank you very much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Pete.